see if I can do this. This is the first time I've been in front of people since probably grade school. So, I hope not. No tomatoes, please. All right. Well, even though Ted opened with prayer, I would like to pray again and ask for his guidance. Our Father in heaven, O holy God, you are holy. You are good. And we praise you for that, Father. We praise you for your love and your goodness. Father, I'm about to give my testimony tonight of my life, the life that you have seen me through until this point. So, Father, I'm asking humbly before you right now that you will speak through me. May it be your words into your glory and not mine. I thank you, and I thank you for all the people that have showed up. I pray that you'll bless them and watch over them and their families. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay. I'm actually going off of my brain. I have no notes, no verses, no scripture. I'm just going to tell you like I know it. I was born in 1979, August 17th of 1979, in Winchester. It's about 15 minutes from here. I have a younger brother, which is, I think he's 36. I'm 39. I'll be 40 in August. And, yeah, I know, right? Come on. Make me a little bit nervous, more nervous. No, just joking. But anyways, I have a brother and I have a younger sister, a baby sister, who just had her baby not too long ago, a little girl. I'm crazy about little girls. I love them. That's my little heart, you know. Ever since Ava, little girls have a spot in my heart. I just... Little boys are little pains. But anyways. Just playing. Anyways, let's see where to start this at. I grew up, I went to church here for a little while when I was about 5 years of age. My grandparents were in the military, my grandpa, and they would move around a lot. And they finally settled in Tennessee. They liked, you know, this atmosphere of it, I guess. But my grandpa and my grandmother, they were the kind that would go to the, you know, the big fancy banquets and stuff and drink with their friends. And my grandmother was a, she was a model in Taiwan. And my grandpa, both of them taught, I think it was judo or something like that. And they were black belts in judo, if I think that's right, Aunt Sharon. Yeah. Well, Grandpa taught me. I'd always ask him how to teach me things. And he said he finally got to the point where he was like, I'll teach you how to fall. So, and I thought it was kind of boring because I didn't want to fall. I wanted to fight, you know, box or something. Anyways, that's besides the point. I'm getting off track here. They found out from my grandpa's brother was an Adventist, and I guess they talked to my grandparents, and my grandparents got interested in it, and they end up coming here to this church. They stayed here for a little while, and then I remember coming to Sabbath school here. Then they end up going to Mont Eagle Mountain, up on the mountain, and we went to church up there till I was about 16 years of age. And I remember back when life was good, back when my mom and dad were in church, and they loved the Lord. That was the best time of my life that I can remember. And, you know, I look back on it, and I just wish things, you know, were a lot different. Of course, a lot of people do, but, you know, I would not change that for the world, because they love God. They love the Lord, you know. And that's where my heart was. And this kind of sets the stage for my testimony, but that's where my heart was. It was with God. And I remember, I went to the church school for a little while, and then I got put in public school. And that's where I got introduced to a lot of stuff that, you know, no kid should really get introduced to. Because I would hear kids talking dirty about things that they shouldn't be talking about, and I learned it. Well, I resisted it. I didn't go that way for a while. And I remember, fast forward. I was about 16 years of age, and I had been doing stuff that I wasn't supposed to do. And I started easing out of the church because I was fast, and the football team wanted me to play football on Friday nights, I remember. Well, I didn't play because of the Sabbath. So I started going to work when I was 16. And I remember slowly inching my way out because the world looked so, it looked great. It looked fun. It looked like just a good time. And so I started easing that way. And before I knew it, my mom and dad, they kind of got out of the church too, you know. For the longest time, I felt like it was my fault because I was the first one to step out. And anyways, I was pretty wild. I done a lot of stuff I shouldn't have done. And anyways, I got in trouble. I got in trouble for driving when I wasn't supposed to. I wasn't like a thief or nothing like that. I thought it was fun doing what I was doing, trying to alter my mind and feeling good and getting in with the wrong crowd and like girls too much. And anyways, let's see. My mom and dad got out of the church, and I was about 18. I was about to graduate. I graduated in 98. And I was working over here at Microcraft, working on the apprenticeship program right out of high school. And I had a girl through high school that kind of kept me safe, I'd say, kept me out of trouble. I had a girlfriend for about 3 years. Anyways, we broke up, and I just kind of went downhill after that. And it seemed like everything I'd done, it didn't matter what I touched or what would happen. It was like I would get in trouble for it. I could be in a room full of felons, and something come up missing, and they'd look at me. I'd get in trouble all the time. I don't know how it was, but and everybody always took me wrong. It seemed to me like they took me wrong because, I don't know. I was always nice, but yet I was still on that bad side. Anyways, I'll try to make this a little shorter, but I got in, out in, I got out and got into stuff I shouldn't have. Like, you know, it kept getting harder. The more I was in the world, the more deeper I got into it. Music was a big factor to me. I loved music. I loved that beat. I loved that feeling the music gave me. And it just felt so good. And now that I look back on it, it was demonic spirits that were channeling into my brain. It wasn't God or feeling good. You know, it was a false sense of feel good, you know. And anyways, that was a big part of my life because my dad, he used to, you know, have big subwoofers sitting in the house and a big stereo system. And then I remember him just cranking it loud, you know, and the whole house just shaking, you know. And I think that's, you know, where I got that from. But then he had, anyways, you know, before it was, I should have backed up. I skipped a whole bunch, but I skipped the part where my mom and dad were in church. Once my grandpa and grandma got in the church, then my dad followed. And when my dad followed, prior to that, he was drinking. He was young. And, okay, they got in the church and life was good. You know, life took a different turn, you know, even as a child, because I would listen to my dad and my mom. My dad was, he was a pretty big guy and he had a voice on him and he would scare you, but he wouldn't do it on purpose. He just had a bad temper. And I remember curled up in a ball listening to him argue all night long, you know, just my dad knew how to drag stuff out. And I remember shaking, just, you know, couldn't do anything, just hearing stuff slam and bust and whatnot. And anyways, that went on when I was 5, 6, I remember 7, or no, it was before 5, I was younger than 5. Somewhere in there, I get mixed up. But, yeah, once my dad got into church, it was a different story. Totally different story. You couldn't make him mad. You couldn't do anything to him to make him mad because he had God in his heart. And I remember him saying that, you know. I remember him telling a guy that, you know, that he was like, man, I'm so on fire for God, you know, and nothing can really disturb me. But anyways, they were in church for, I may get this wrong, about 5, 6 years, I guess, maybe longer. I think it might have been longer. But anyways, they were in church, you know, and like I said, life was good. You know, my dad, we done things together. I just remember a lot of good stuff we did. My dad always tried to buy stuff all the time, you know, and that was good and all, but, you know, I wanted him to go hunting with me or something like that, or, you know, he went fishing with us. He did stuff with us, don't get me wrong. I was craving his attention. I was wanting his attention more. And, anyways, high school, back to that part. I started doing bad stuff that I shouldn't have been doing. And the night that I got in trouble, I had my Mustang. I had a 90 model Mustang GT with a 5-speed. And I had been coming back from a party one night. It was behind the high school in Tullahoma, or Winchester. And I had leaned over and went to change the CD, and I just passed out. Well, thankfully, I was coming up to a stop sign, but it was a real, real deep ditch, and I had turned the car upside down or sideways, and some people that were inside heard it, and it was like 12 o'clock at night, 1. Anyways, they were up, and they come out there, and they said, you know, they're like, hey, you smell a little funny, and, you know, they could tell something was wrong with me. And so they were like, well, come on in. We'll call your parents before the cops come. And I went on in. Anyways, they called my dad. Well, my dad, he wasn't drinking all the way up till this point. For some reason, I called my mom, and I told her what had happened. She was like, yep, your dad's been doing it too. And I'll never forget that. They just crushed me on the inside. And even though I was doing it. But anyways, we seen an older lady outside, and she was looking up at the light pole saying, "Come on down here." You know, she had, Alzheimer's, whatever. And we picked her up and drove her to the police station. My dad walked her in, you know, been drinking and everything, and it just made me nervous. But my dad was like that. He could do things, you know, and I don't know, just he had a way about him. He was real handy with his hands, but started drinking. We lived that lifestyle for a long time. We ended up moving out of our nice house that we had. It was a nice place. We just moved right down the road because we were going to move to go help my grandmother. She was having my grandpa and grandmother. We were going to move closer to them. We got a house with a swimming pool. Well, if you're drinking and partying, that's not a good thing to do, is get a place with a swimming pool, because you have parties over there all the time. I mean, we would keep beer there all the time. So we had the beer crew, people who like to drink, come over and party all the time. And they'd be going to the clubs and stuff. And anyways, they got introduced to something else that it was a real potent drug. I don't want to say the name of it, but it was a real potent drug. That's when my family really changed. It went from one scene of people to a different type of people coming over. The next thing you know, my mom leaves. She didn't want anything to do with it. I end up packing up and leaving and going to live with my grandmother, because I said, you know, I've had enough of this. I'll never forget it. My dad had his 16-foot trailer backed up to the garage, and he was throwing away a lot of stuff. And I remember looking down and seeing Ellen G. White books, and I picked up the Steps of Christ, and, man, it broke my heart. It really broke my heart to see that, you know, he didn't have God in his life anymore. I'm trying to think. I went and lived with my grandmother for a while, and I was getting straight, and I was going to church with her, and we'd go do things together. Next thing you know, here I go again. I got in contact with somebody at work, and it was that quick. I made the wrong choice again. It happens very quick. I mean, before you know it, you're doing fine, and if you don't keep your eyes on Jesus and stay with him, you can fall quick. No matter, you know, it doesn't matter what you fall to, but Satan will creep in, and he'll take you, and he'll get you. And you have no choice but to go with him, because you made that choice. But if you make the right choice, he can't touch you because Jesus is with you. But, so I'm trying to, I have the worst memory. I was always slow in school, and always worried about when people were taking tests, everybody just turned their papers in, and I'd be the last one to turn mine in. But, trying to think. I'll fast forward all the way up until, 2007, I had a girlfriend, and we had been drinking. I used to lay brick and block, and we worked for one of the guys that left my Uncle Jasper's company. When he closed it down, we went, and we're going to start our own business up and do it. Anyways, his brother partnered up with him. His brother had a little BMW Sportster convertible. It was a real fast car, two-seater. And we got off of work, cleaned up. We went to the bowling alley that night. They were selling beer really cheap. So I had my brother and his wife, well, girlfriend at the time. They were in the back seat, and it was me and my girlfriend in the front. She was driving because she wasn't drinking or anything. And anyways, the guy, it was Johnny and his brother. His brother quit drinking and everything. He was straight, but he was in the passenger seat, and he had called back. Well, let me back up. We decided to leave the bowling alley and go over Johnny's house. Well, we left the bowling alley and we left, and we got like about a mile away from his house, maybe a half mile. And Calvin, his brother, called and said, "Listen, Johnny's acting crazy. You're going to have to pull over. I want to get out and ride with y'all." I was like, "Okay, we'll pull over." So we pulled over and got out, and we just pulled over on the side of the road. It's out on Cumberland Springs Road, if anybody knows where it's at. We pulled over right when you turn on Cumberland Springs, and Calvin gets out and starts walking back. Well, Clint jumps out of the back seat and says, "Hey, all right, all right." And his girlfriend, Fallon, started arguing because she was like, "No, you don't need to get in the car. He's messed up. He's messed up, you know." And anyways, I jumped out of the truck and just ran up there and jumped in and turned up the stereo, and I said, "Go." I said, "Kick it." It's about the last thing I remember of it, because they said that about a quarter mile down the road, it comes into a curve with a guardrail. There used to be an old lake on the side. There's a great big old oak tree at the end of the guardrail, and he always bragged about this curve, about how he could take it at 90 miles an hour, which I don't believe it. But he said, "Yeah, this car's designed for stuff like that." Anyways, I was messed up, and I didn't care. I made a bad choice. I got in the car with him, and we went around that curve about 80 miles an hour and hit the guardrail, and it slingshotted us straight into the oak tree. Didn't have seat belts on. Didn't have the top down. Airbags busted out, and that's the only thing that saved us. Well, it was an angel, but, you know, we didn't have seat belts on. Anyways, I was laid over in his lap across the gear shifter. This leg was broken and flipped up behind me. And they said that they had to cut him out of the driver's seat. That's how bad it was. They took me up to Motlow and airlifted me to Vanderbilt. And then shortly after that, they got him out and airlifted him to Vanderbilt. Well, of course, you know, I woke up the next morning. It's kind of like these lights here. I just kind of opened my eyes, and I was like, you know, where am I? What's going on? I had no clue where I was or what had happened. And a nurse came over and said, he's awake. Go ahead and get his family. And I remember I was hurting so bad on my left side, and they had a weight going through my leg with a weight hanging off of the end of the bed to keep my hip and everything aligned. And I remember my aunt and my mom come in, my Aunt Tammy. And I couldn't talk. I had a tube going down me to breathe. And I was trying to ask them what happened. And they said, "Well, you've been in a car accident." They said, "Here, write on a piece of paper what you're trying to say." And I just put my hand up there, and I remember it just slid down. I couldn't do anything with it. But anyways, that was a bad choice. I chose to get in that car, and I chose to ride with him. First off, I chose to drink and do other stuff I shouldn't have been doing. Those were my bad choices that I can never take them back or get those choices back. But I can make the right choices in the future from here on out, which I'm doing. And I pray I never, nothing ever happens. comes between me and the Lord. But anyways, I got out. I was stayed in Vanderbilt for a little while, and when I got out, I had nowhere to go, so they put me in the life care unit over here in Tullahoma, or by the side of the hospital. And I spent about 6 months or so in there, and I couldn't even get up or do anything. I had, my ribs were bruised, my collarbone was broke, my hip, it was broke, or pelvis, and my left hip, my left femur, and this left tibula, and then my right tibula and my right ankle, they were all busted up. Well, it was hard to move me or anything for the longest time. I mean, I couldn't go to the bathroom to get up or anything. They had to take care of me. It was real humiliating, you know. And what was real humiliating to me was a girl that I know, this pretty girl, I was friends with her, she had to take care of me. So my humility was broken, or I was broken from a lot of stuff, mentally, physically, spiritually. Anyways, I spent, like I said, about 6 months in the life care, and I told myself, I said, that's it. The Lord saved me. I'm giving my life back to Him, and I'm not going to ever leave Him. Well, that didn't last too long. You would think I would have learned my lesson, but I don't know, I guess I'm hard-headed, but for a while I went to church. I came here in the wheelchair, and I had people come and see me, which was a blessing. And long story short, I got back into that scene once again. And I got to a point, once I got back on my feet and everything, I had to spend a long time in a wheelchair. Then once I got back on my feet and I got moving and everything, I got a job. And this is kind of a good story right here. But I got this job. I was in a temp service, working in Shelbyville at the D.C. for Newell Rubbermaid. Okay, I wasn't in church when I first got hired on there, or with the Lord. I got hired on, and I was working, and I got hired on temporarily. I was working. They liked me. I was a good worker. But then, like I said, you know, I was sitting around 4th of July one time and sitting on the front porch with my mom and at somebody's house. And I said, I've had enough. I'm done. So I'm done with this lifestyle. And shortly after that, I heard that I was going to have a little girl. And I straightened up right before her. And ever since that day, I worked to strive to be a good dad and to grow closer to God. And here's a little testimony of the Sabbath. While I was working there, as a temp, they give you 3 points, and then you point out, and then they let you go. And so what happened was, I was keeping the Sabbath. So 1 point, 1 point, 1 point, 3 times, and I was gone. They said, we got to let you go, Eric. And I done asked them, I said, Kent, is there any way that I can work more hours or anything? They said, no, our policy won't allow that. And so they let me go. Well, I prayed about it. I was like, Lord, what am I going to do? Very next day, I got a phone call. Same company. They said, "Eric, we have a position for you in Manchester at the chemical plant for Newell Rubbermaid." I said, "Oh, okay." They said, they don't work a lot of overtime on your Sabbath." I said, "All right." So I took the job. I went to Knights. While I was there, I always wanted to be a firefighter. I mean, I liked it. It was just something cool about it. They had a fire brigade on site, and they even had a fire truck on site. Well, everybody who works there has to go through the academy out at Deason, and they have to complete the 64-hour course and a lot of other different courses and stuff. Anyways, long story short, that was a blessing to me because, you know, I was temp at first, so you couldn't do it. But here's the kicker, or here's where it gets good. They went to hire new hirees, and there was like four or five of us that were new temps. And they asked me, they said, do you want to apply? And I told them my situation. I was like, "You guys already know my situation. I don't work on the Sabbath." They said, "Well, yeah, we realize that." Well, the HR lady, she told me, she was like, "You know, you can take your vacation, and that can cover your time off on Friday night or Saturday." I was like, "Hey, all right. I mean, I'm game, you know. I went from $9 an hour up to $14 an hour." I was like, "That's all right, you know." I said, "The Lord is good, you know. He blessed me big time." And anyways, while I was hired on full-time, they put me in the fire academy out at Deason for a week, and we done a lot of classes. I got to learn a lot. There was one time I was mixing up, I was mixing chemicals up, and I forget the compounds and what they were. Oh, I wish I could remember. But they were almost identical. But if you put them together, they'll blow up like a big explosion. Anyways, I caught that, and, long story short, our chief found out about it, and, you know, they praised me for it, you know, good job type deal. He told the boss that I should have at least a day off of work, you know, with pay. But anyways, I liked that job. I loved it. It was awesome because we got to do the firefighting on the side. Our chief would take me and one other guy out to eat in the truck. He liked us. He'd pull us out of work just to do things. Anyways, I was really blessed working there. The Lord blessed me big time. Then there's this head guy that is over the plant manager of the place where I was working. This guy at the plant manager where I was working went above the second-in-command guy to the guy above that was, in, you know, the CEO of all of it, to get some property in Manchester. Well, they approved it, so they bought that property for $1. So the guy in the middle, Scott Roberts or whoever, I can't remember his name, but he got mad. And there was nothing he could do about it because the guy went over his head, the supervisor. Anyways, long story short, again, that guy retired or something. So the second guy in charge moved up to his spot. Well, what do you think happened? I mean, he comes in, gets rid of him, the supervisor, and he started working his way down through everybody, getting rid of all the supervisors, replacing people, you know, with his people. Anyways, it came down to the new hirees, and they said, they were like, "Okay, you can either take a buyout or go to the DC. The DC is where I came from." And I was like, "Man," I said, "I want to keep working." I was like, you guys know my situation. I can't work on the Sabbath. And over there, I know they'll point me out real quick. Well, I have 9 points when I'm full time and in some vacation time. Anyways, they hired me. I went over there making the same pay. And I told them, and I started keeping the Sabbath. And about the time, I kept the Sabbath, and I pointed out and everything, all of it. They came to me one evening right at the beginning of my shift, and they were like, come to the office. So I had to go up to the HR office, talk to the lady who told me, she was the HR over both places, told me that, Eric, you pointed out we're going to have to put you on suspension. We're going to put you on probation or whatever. We're going to investigate this. So I said, all right. Anyways, I got a hold of Uncle David, and I asked him, because he had to use religious liberty one time. So I got religious liberty. Stand up. I got religious liberty involved in it. And they sent the HR lady a note, a nice note. It was no threatening or anything. They just said, could you please change your mind or rethink this? They said, Eric doesn't do this for his pleasure. He really does this because this is what he believes. He keeps the Sabbath. And also, I know about law number, whatever it was. Just let them know, hey, they know the law. Anyways, they called me in. They said, okay, Eric, come in July the 18th. And I'll tell you how I know this date. Because it was a couple days, and then I was on my way to work to go to the meeting, and I got a phone call, and it was from my dad's girlfriend in California. It was from a girlfriend who he used to date when he got back into the church there in California. He started going back to church, and I would talk to him all the time because, when he's on fire for the Lord, he's, he loves us. He shows us love. And we talked back and forth for a long time. And then all of a sudden, he just quit calling. And every time I would call him, I couldn't get his phone or get him to answer. And I knew something was wrong. I was like, yep, he's back into doing what he used to do. And, like I said, it broke my heart. My mind's drawing a blank. Hate that. Anyways, I was on the way to work, and it was about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I got that phone call from my dad's girlfriend because he had went back. He had heart problems, and he had congestive heart failure. And this is stuff I didn't know about, nobody knew about until later. And he even had a heart attack. And it was all because of drugs. That's the only reason why, or else he'd probably still be here today. But, like I said, we haven't talked for a long time. So she called me, and I was sitting there talking on my way to work to get my job back. And she told me, she said, Eric, they're wanting the family up here because your dad's not doing good. He came to my house last night, and he was like ice cold, and he couldn't get warm. And anyways, long story short, I was like, well, can I talk to him? And she said, yeah, you can talk to him, but he's hurting real bad. I said, all right. So she gave him the phone to talk to me. And, I'll never forget it because I longed for it, but he was like, I love you, son, and that was it. And then I said, I know. I said,
I said, we're going to try to get on a plane and fly out as soon as we can, me, April, and Clint. And he didn't respond. You know, that was it. She got the phone back. She said he went to the bathroom to throw up because he wasn't feeling any good. But anyways, that was the last time I talked to my dad. And when I got to work, I just got all this in my head, you know, and I'm like, wow. And then here I am trying to save my job. And I went in, sat down. They were like, Eric, we're going to work with you on the Sabbath. I was like, well, thank you. Said, we're going to let you work more hours during the week to make up the hours that are not that are worked by everybody else. So I was like, all right. And because I had offered them that beforehand, I told them, I said, listen, I work as many hours as it takes as long as I get the Sabbath off. Long story short, I keep saying that, it gets longer and longer. But anyways, I told them about my dad, and they were like, they're real, real nice about everything. They were like trying to get me a plane ticket. They're like, you know, go take as much time as you need. You got your job when you come back. So I was like, well, thank you. You know, I shook their hands and kind of teared up. You know, they were real nice. They just, anyways, I left, went home. About an hour later, got the phone call that my dad passed away. Well, I had flown out to California. And we stayed out there for, I don't know, it was about 3 weeks or so, just trying to tie loose ends up and all this and that. And, you know, we got to see my dad before they cremated him. You know, we were wanting to, and they weren't going to let us, you know, and the Lord opened it up to where we could see him because they were going to make us pay to see my dad. But we got back from California. And I went to work, and I worked, and I always wanted to go back into machine shop because that was where my heart was because my dad done it. I really looked up to my dad. And anyways, I seen a guy that works here at Microcraft. That's where I was wanting to get a job, and I thought I could never get a job there because I just didn't know enough. Well, I seen that guy. I went up there and I applied and I told them, they were like, you know, they knew me like family. And they were like, yeah, you got a job anytime you want it. Come on in. I was like, wow, just kind of blew my mind. Anyways, I got back into the machine shop and started working. And that's kind of where I've been ever since, but different places working. Anyways, the Lord blessed me with the Sabbath on that. You know, he's good. And I could go on and on and on and tell you guys all kinds, and I'm sure you guys could tell me all kinds of testimonial stories that where God's been good to you. And well, I have always wanted to, since the car accident, become a physical therapist. So I just signed up not too long ago to become a physical therapist assistant because it's a shorter class. So I'm praying God that he will see me through it and give me the knowledge and the extra energy and strength that I need to do it. And, you know, I'm in a loving church family. I love everybody to death. I mean, you guys are great. And my family. Yeah. That's basically about it. That's all I can really think of. But God's been good to me. He's been real good. And I just want to see my daughter grow, you know, and become a woman after God's heart. That's what I've tried to instill in her. I've prayed prayed, put my hands on her before I go to work every day since she was little. I used to sing to her when she's in the womb and pray for her, and I think she's turned out pretty good. But that's my little heartbeat. But yeah, here's a song that touched my heart when I heard it, and I don't know, it just kind of sums up things for me. Thank you guys for coming.
If you want to, sure.
Love you, Eric.
Love you too, man.
Lately, I've been looking back along this winding road to the old familiar markers of the mercies I have known. I know it may sound simple, but it's more than a cliche. There's no better way to tell you than to say, God's been good in my life. I feel blessed beyond my wildest dreams when I go to sleep each night. And though I've had my share of hard times, I wouldn't change them if I could. 'Cause through it all, God's been good. Times replay, and I can see that I've cried some bitter tears, but I felt His arms around me as I faced my greatest fears. You see, I've had more gains than losses, and I've known more joy than hurt. As His grace rolled down upon me, undeserved. For God's been good in my life. I feel blessed beyond my wildest dreams when I go to sleep each night. And though I've had my share of hard times, I wouldn't change them if I could. 'Cause through it all, God's been good. For God has been my Father, my Savior, and my friend. His love was my beginning, and His love will be my end. I could spend forever trying to tell you everything He is. But the best way that I can say it is this: God's been good in my life. I feel so blessed beyond my wildest dreams when I go to sleep each night. And though I've had my share of hard times, I wouldn't change them if I could. 'Cause through it all, God's been good.
The song describes it.